This is an ABC podcast.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Are we sleepwalking into a cashless society? Various experts are predicting Australia is likely to become functionally cashless sometime between 2025 and 2030. So what does that mean? Well, in a functionally cashless society, about 90% of all payments would be cashless, but physical notes and coins would still be legal tender. That said, I'm sure you've come across quite a few businesses who only accept card. Good morning, Kirsten Diprose here with you for the Conversation Hour, filling in this week for Rochelle Hunt on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria. According to the Australian Banking Association, payments in Australia were 70% cash back in 2007. It dropped to just 13% in 2022, and the ABA is projecting it to be just 4% by 2030. So how close are we to being cashless? But more importantly, are we consciously making this decision? Now, the federal government, of course, hasn't made any ruling that cash will be taken out of circulation. But are banks and businesses quietly moving in this direction? Macquarie Bank is phasing out cash this year, while the Commonwealth, NAB and ANZ have stopped handling cash in a handful of branches now. So do you use cash anymore? And if so, how often? Does it concern you that we are becoming increasingly cashless?
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is the Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
You know, interestingly, Sweden was the first European country to introduce banknotes back in 1661 and then became the world's first cashless society last year. Finland and the UK are top ranked to become cashless societies as well. And Australia might not be far behind. Now, there are undoubtedly benefits for being cashless around convenience and even transparency. But have we had all the conversations around financial exclusion, around privacy, and even surcharges? So do you still use cash anymore? Or are we on a one-way trajectory to being cashless? Jason Bryce is campaign manager of cashwelcome.org, which advocates for physical cash. Hi, Jason.
How are you, Kirsten?
I'm well, thanks. Now, I think I know your position, but are you concerned when you look at the projections of when we're likely to be cashless? Is this some sort of unstoppable train?
There's always some so-called expert predicting the cashless society. It's been going on for decades now. The Commonwealth Bank tells their merchant service customers that Australia is about to become cashless. And they've been changing the date on when Australia is going to be cashless every year or so. That's been going on for decades.
I did find a few of those in my research. I found, you know, Australia predicted to be cashless by 2022. That was back in 2017. That prediction came out. It is hard to predict.
Well, Sweden has just backtracked and gone back to cash. New laws guarantee ATMs in every town because they've decided it was a big mistake. So yes, 90-odd percent or more in Sweden is cashless. They have an app, a Swish app, which is backed by the big banks. That's fine for most of the people, but it's not fine for everybody, and it's not fine when there's an outage. So they've got new laws guaranteeing that everybody can have access to cash. And I've just been pushing back on, one, the idea that we're about to go cashless, because it just seems to just think about it. You know, we're all being caught out in an outage. We're all concerned about our information and losing control of it. Surcharges are going up. Why are card surcharges going up when there's more people using cards and phones and tap and go? Surely the economies of scale should be working the other way. And, you know, there is the reliability aspect. And, of course, there's so many people in our community that use cash for budgeting. So there's a number of reasons why it's ridiculous, but that doesn't stop the latest expert from getting a bit of a run on by saying, yes, we're about to go cashless. It's a
There's a lot of people on our text line who are very pro cash, and they're concerned about electricity or internet outages. They're concerned about the tracking. But then there are others who say, I only use cash when I'm forced to, i.e. my hairdresser is cashless only, and so is my favourite coffee shop. What are the main concerns about being a cashless society for you?
Well, I use my phone and my card to pay for things a lot, but I do keep cash in my pocket for all these reasons, you know, reliability, if I just want a little bit of privacy or whatever. And I think there's a growing sense that we should have just a little bit of money, real money, in our pocket or our wallet when we go out and about, so we're in control.
Stay with us, Jason, for a moment. We're going to take some calls. Sophie is in Healesville. Hi, Sophie.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to make a valid point that when the power went out recently, and I have a little cheese shop in the Yarra Valley, that I lost customers for most of the day for the 2 days that we had the power out, because the FBOS machines wouldn't work, and people just didn't have the time on their lunch break or couldn't get to an ATM or didn't have cash in their pockets. And I've always had a little sign at the front of my counter saying cash appreciated, and I think people probably think I'm just going to put the cash in my pocket, but it's actually so that I don't have to charge the surcharge on a machine, and that if the power goes out, which it does frequently in the Yarra Valley, I can actually look after my customers.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, that a lot of people didn't even have the cash. But some cafes or, you know, bars and things, they only accept card. They don't. I've been to plenty of places where they say no cash.
I just don't understand that. I just don't see how that's going to work for us. It's only going to work for the banks. They're the ones that are reaping all the benefits of this. And I really dislike having to charge my customers a surcharge, but I absorbed it for 2 years, and then in the second year I realised I was getting huge bills. Thought, I'm just going to have to, yeah.
Sophie, thank you. We're just losing you there a little bit. Jason, Sophie made a point about the banks benefiting. Do you think this is sort of quietly creeping in because of the banks?
The banks are hurting us. I started my petition and started my little campaign when my local bank branch closed down, despite the fact that there was a queue out the door every morning, and especially on pension day. They took away the ATMs as well, so there was no question in my mind that this was not consumer-led. When the banks say, oh, we can't afford to open this branch anymore, changing consumer behaviour means more people are online. Yes, all that's true, but we still want banking services in our local town or suburb, and we still want to be able to access cash if we need it. And I'm just asking the banks, when you move out of a town or you move out of a suburb and you take your ATMs away, how are we supposed to withdraw cash? Some banks are branchless, some banks are cashless, but those banks provide fee-free ATM withdrawals at all the other ATMs. So I'm maybe suggesting to the big banks, what are you doing for your customers to ensure that we can get cash when you move out of town?
Jason, thank you so much for joining us and, illuminating this issue. You're obviously a very, you know, passionate campaigner on this matter. Jason Bryce, campaign manager of cashwelcome.org. Audrey is in Chadstone. Hi, Audrey.
I feel extremely strongly about this issue. I pay cash wherever I can, and if there's a business saying they don't accept cash, I just walk out and don't pay and don't take the goods, because it's ridiculous. The banks make money out of it. All the points have already been made, but I just want to lend my voice and support and say it's outrageous that now it's no longer a legal issue if a business doesn't accept cash payment. It used to be the case that you could take the goods anyway and walk out legally. Well, now that's been changed.
Yeah, the ACCC has made a ruling on it that you don't have to accept cash, which is quite interesting. That sort of idea, it's a myth that still propagates today that you have to accept cash, but you don't legally. You can refuse cash.
It was pretty sneaky. I wasn't aware of it until someone had pointed it out to me, and I thought, well, when did that come around?
Yeah.
So the whole thing's quite underhanded, and I'm afraid I don't trust the direction that society is going when this kind of stuff gets pushed down our throats.
Thank you, Audrey. Let's go to Susan, who's in Albury. Hi, Susan.
I was at Perth Airport last year wanting to buy a coffee. I had the correct money, and they don't take cash. They only take card. And then they charge me extra for using my card.
Yeah, well, there's surcharges, of course, but you're not meant to profit from the surcharge as the business. I think that's the rule.
I just don't agree with it. If I've got cash, I want to be able to pay cash for my drinks.
Yeah,
for anything.
And you don't have the choice about the surcharge then.
No.
Yeah, no, good point. Well, Ben Rogers is the Policy and Advocacy Manager at Seniors Rights Victoria. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Obviously, and we've got quite a few text messages on this about older people who may not be really across a lot of the online services or using digital applications.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's really our sort of key concern around these closures of banks is that there's a real issue around digital exclusion, particularly with older people being really digitally excluded and not necessarily feeling comfortable or able to at times use online banking services. That's not to say it's all older people. I dare say you'll have plenty of listeners who feel really comfortable with online banking. But we know it's a persistent issue, and we know that it's not an issue that doesn't necessarily completely go away over time, and it's something that really needs work and support.
What are some of the barriers that older people face when it comes to, you know, being cashless?
It's really sort of being excluded from, one, being able to get your own money, but two, you know, from the community in a sense. We know that particularly in regional areas, banks are often a key part of the community infrastructure that keep people connected, you know, ensure people are not socially isolated. And really, a big concern for us is, especially with the move to cashless, is that it can actually sort of increase the conditions that could lead to, say, for instance, financial elder abuse. You know, for us, it's a real key point. You know, one of the key things we advise is, particularly if you are worried about financial elder abuse, is going with someone trusted to a bank where you can get your money out. If it's online, there is an increased risk that you could, you know, someone could take advantage of a situation. And particularly when you look at the online scams, it really is people over the age of 65 who are being impacted. You know, in 2023 alone, you know, people over the age of 65 reported 72,000 instances of scams, you know, losing over $120 million.
A text message from Bruce in Fitzroy says, the MCG is totally cashless this year. You can't buy a footy ticket or a pie, and it's just jumped away from me now, but without using a card. What happens in instances like that when you're out and about, and say if you are at the MCG, there's nowhere else to go and you don't have cash?
I think it's so wrong. And it really leaves people at a disadvantage where they can't enjoy the experiences that they can afford, that they want to, you know, that they want to take, you know, maybe loved ones too, and it's exclusionary, and it really is something where it seems so unnecessary, you know, potentially over 90% soon of transactions will not involve cash, but that is still 10% of transactions that do, and that is still, you know, we wouldn't accept 10% of society being excluded from something completely irrationally.
Now, the closure of regional banks has, you know, been all over the news lately. I think we've had hundreds close in the last couple of years across the country. How does that play into it as well?
Well, especially in regional areas, you're often further away from other sources of getting cash. And it really, you know, potentially you may only be 20, 30 minutes away from another ATM or another bank. But if you don't have the means to get there, You are excluded. You are unable to get your cash. You are unable to get your tender that you can use to go about your day. And especially, you know, we know with that older people, there are more older people in regional areas. It has a more pronounced impact. Yeah. And especially with your earlier caller, you know, even in Yarra Valley, experiencing those outages, having less reliable internet, it really leaves older people in these areas potentially unable to secure their goods, you know, to live their lives, which is what we want. We want people living in the community for as long as possible and able to prosper.
Ben Rogers, thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Ben Rogers, Policy and Advocacy Manager at Senior Rights Victoria. On the text line, one good thing about becoming a cashless society, it will put all the drug dealers out of business. It's from Peter in South Yarra. Similar sentiment from Amy. The only people who need cash these days are drug dealers and tradies avoiding declaring their income. Let's get rid of it. I'd rather pay a card surcharge if it means less dodgy people.
On the ABC Listen app, your smart speaker, and on AM radio.
This is The Conversation Hour on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
My name's Kirsten Diprose. I'm filling in for Rochelle Hunt this week, and gosh, the phones have gone hot. Joe is in Hawkesburn. How are you going, Joe?
I'm going fantastic, thank you. In many ways, I'm going fantastic because of the cashless society. I absolutely love it.
Tell me why.
So look, I'm 71 years old, semi-retired. I still do a bit of independent work. And working with UsCash has just made the transition into sort of, you know, into the fourth age group, into the golden age, much easier, smoother. I don't have to check, you know, the change on payment. I can't be cheated. If somebody did something wrong, I've got a clear record and proof of it. I don't have to think about it, you know. And personally, you know, everything is just easier and smoother. But the point I want to make is, it's clear to me that my behavior in working without cash saves money for everybody. You know, that cafe with the surcharge on a credit card, they pay a surcharge for cash as well. We just don't see it. You know, they need the safety. They need to take the money to the bank. They need a bank teller. At the end of the day, we're paying for that. So in a way, I'm subsidizing everybody else who finds it hard to move into cashless. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to be transparent and clear. It's not free. Everybody's crying about surcharges for credit cards. We all pay a surcharge for cash, you know, transactions.
Oh, look, it's an interesting perspective.
And I'm subsidizing it, yeah.
And I know over the weekend I woke up to a message saying that my bank had blocked my card because of suspicious activity, and, you know, they saved me from, you know, $175 was the odd charge. I didn't make that, and then blocked the card immediately, and, you know, I never lost any money. But that said, you know, you could also argue, well, if it was all done by cash, it wouldn't have happened in the first place.
Oh, look, I understand everything. And I understand that many people are not as comfortable. You know, I'm a, you know, computer scientist when I was still working. So I'm very digitally, you know, savvy and everything else. And I teach my peer group, and everybody that I train to do it and to do it safely ends up benefiting hugely and thanking me for it. But the bottom line I'm saying is, cost-reflective pricing. If you want to stay using cash, go ahead, but pay the don't make me subsidise it. That's my only claim.
Joe, thanks for calling in. Let's go to David in Croydon. Hi, David. You're also in favour of a cashless society.
Yeah, good morning. I'm early 50s, and for 30 years I have hardly used cash at all. I think it's really inconvenient to go and get it out of the ATM. You may be at a shop and you don't have enough to pay for what you want. It's dirty. You're at risk of robbery. I think it's amazing. I haven't used cash for 30 years.
Years?
Then there's the other benefit of having a credit. Yeah, I reckon since I've been in my entire adult life, I just don't see the point of having cash.
Are you one of these people with the Apple Watch?
I can't think of...
Have you done away with cards as well?
I haven't. I must admit, I still have a credit card, a physical plastic card. But I was going to say that one of the other benefits is you spend on a credit card, you have some protection in terms of refunds embedded in that legislation, which you wouldn't have paid for with cash.
Yeah, absolutely. David, thank you for your call. 1300 222 774, or text on 0437 774 774. You're allowed to want a cashless society as well, but I can tell you now the text messages are very concerned about going cashless, particularly if there was an outage or, you know, something to cause the system to go down. Let's go to Professor Steve Worthington now from the School of Business and Law at Swinburne University. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. Hello.
So I started the show about the predictions that are coming in from experts from all over the place, you know, experts in the finance world, but also in academia, who are saying that Australia will be cashless by 2030 or even as early as 2025. Do you agree with this?
No.
Thanks for your time. No. Tell us why.
I think they're way off the beam there, because I think cash will be with us for a number of decades to come. Partly because, as I've been listening into the program, there are people who actually enjoy cash, people who use it, and there's obviously we have had a huge increase in the amount of digital transactions taking place, and cash has suffered that from as a means of payments. But we need to also remember that cash is also very important to many people as a store of wealth. And the amount of $150 notes that are squirreled away for various reasons is actually huge, massive amounts. So cash is not just a means of payment, it's a store of wealth which many people value as well.
Well, I think interestingly, as we move towards a cashless society, there are some people who are feeling like they need to squirrel away these physical notes just in case the whole system goes down.
Well, that is a point made by some of your people calling in already, that we do have outages, as they call them, the IT systems of the banks or telecoms breakdown. And then how does anybody buy anything or whatever? Then that's when cash comes in very useful. Or indeed in disasters such as flooding or fires or something, you know, when the whole infrastructure burns down, as it were, or destroyed. So then you need cash, and that's what we fall back on. But I think there are also significant minorities in Australia who rely very heavily on cash. That can be senior citizens who are not digitally enhanced, as it were, or people who live in regional or rural areas where internet connectivity could be very intermittent. So, you know, we've got to consider everybody here, and I'm very much in favour of inclusion rather than exclusion. I think if we lost cash, we'd be excluding a lot of people from social and economic activity in Australia.
There is a bit of a sense, though, that this is happening anyway, like banks are just slowly, you know, not having cash at some of their branches, that, you know, Macquarie is not going to have cash. Mm-hmm. Is this happening to us anyway?
I think, well, obviously, it's a bit of a drip, drip, drip by the banks. And I've got some figures here just out that the number of branches since 2017 have fallen by 37%, that's bank branches, and the number of ATMs has fallen even faster, that's gone down by nearly 60% in those last 6 years. So gradually, yes, we are being the access to cash has been squeezed by the closure of branches or the withdrawal of ATMs. We can access cash through Australia Post, who have many post offices that deal in that, or major retailers who take cash and give some cash back as cash out. But nevertheless, cash is being squeezed, and the current situation with Armaguard as a cash in transit business highlights that.
Well, that's right. Armaguard is struggling financially because there's just not the cash to move around, I suppose. Is that what's happening?
It is. There's less and less cash to move around, that both in delivery and collecting it. And also, Armaguard would argue that the size of the country of Australia is huge, and that travelling and taking stuff to regional areas costs, you know, quite a lot more money than taking it to a nearby suburb. So, yes, I'm sure that they're feeling the pinch as well, and that's why there is that discussion with the industry and also with the politicians. I mean, I saw the other day that the treasurer of the current government said that we want to keep cash, and so does the prime minister. So there are political aspects to this as well.
A couple of text messages. Don't forget the various forms of card fraud. My Visa card was stolen from my car, and the thief used it for $150 worth of goods by tap and pay. The cash in my pocket was safe. Josh in Ascot Vale says, store of wealth. Seriously, other than criminals, then by who? So I guess he's questioning, Steve Worthington, who's storing cash? Is it just the criminals that, you know, we're protecting by keeping cash?
I don't think it is. I think nefarious activities obviously form part of that cash business. But some people keep cash because they don't want to have their assets known by the ATO or by the government, because it's got too many assets to get various welfare provisions. And people sometimes need cash, or they want to keep cash for emergencies. You know, that's what we've been talking about. So It is a store of wealth, but it's for a variety of reasons, and it's very hard to pin down who has it. All I would say is there's an enormous amount of money out there. I read somewhere recently that if you put all the notes that are about the $150 notes together and divide them by the population of Australia, that's about 27 million people, we'd each end up with over $4,000 each of cash, because there's that much cash that's been stored away as a store of wealth.
Wow. Professor Steve Worthington is with us from the School of Business and Law at Swinburne. You've been writing about, you know, this cashless society for at least a decade. What changes have we seen over that time? Why are we suddenly in this situation where we're kind of getting close to being functionally cashless?
We have, yes. It's been coming along, and it was turbocharged by the recent pandemic, of course, where people didn't want to handle cash in any situation. There was some sort of scare that cash would be one of the things that passed COVID on. But also, we have obviously got other means of payment now, digital payments using our cards directly, tap and go, or using our phones to do transactions. So it's, you know, cash is becoming less and less important as a means of payment. But I would still argue that there's three S's, as I call them, that help to preserve cash in this one. First of all, yes, surcharging. I heard it's been mentioned by some people there. There's no surcharging on cash. Although they say there's a cost of cash, which there is, when you surcharge for whatever you're buying, that's the direct cost to you that comes onto your settlement. That's coming onto your balances. You know, you're paying more than you meant to for a particular product or company. Secondly, scams, that was mentioned as well. You don't get scammed by using cash. No one's going to write down the numbers of your bank notes, and it wouldn't matter if it did. But when you use your card, you very often there's a lot of activity on the dark web where people are selling details of people's credit cards and expiry dates and special numbers and so on. And finally, and this is a bit of a disputable point, I think there's a sight idea of cash. We've got used to tap and go, just tapping it on. I think people are, particularly in the cost of living crisis we're in, people are looking and say, well, I want to actually see, want to visualize how much I'm paying for my groceries or my clothing or my coffee. And so there has been an uptick in the amount of cash that's been withdrawn from ATMs in the month of February this year. So we are actually, the pendulum has swung just a little bit back in favour of cash. People are taking more cash out than they were from in the previous year.
That's really interesting. So using it as a financial strategy.
I think so. I think it's a way of actually being more careful with what you're spending and actually visualising how much you're passing over there to try and budget yourself better, yeah.
This text message, Kirsten, I lived in Warrnambool in 2012 when our Telstra exchange burnt down. For 2 weeks we had no ATMs and cash was king. That was from Dee, and I was in Warrnambool at that time too, or in the region, and it was for 2 weeks we operated without any ATMs or cash. I don't know, could we do that today, Steve? Could a whole region, it was the whole southwest of Victoria, we functioned with cash? So there were lines running right outside all of the banks for days as people drew out cash.
Well, it does happen. That was one example with a fire. I mean, we've had floodings in the north of New South Wales, where they've had to actually helicopter in ATMs from some building society to give money to people because everything else collapsed. So, you know, there are exceptional events like that, but also there are outages, as I've already mentioned, where things that are meant to be working stop working, and then we can no longer access cash or use cash to pay for things. You can use it, but you haven't got it. That's one point I'm making. We're having difficulty accessing cash, which would be the fallback position when you have those outages.
Professor Steve Worthington, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
He's from the School of Business and Law at Swinburne University. Let's take some more of your calls. And Barbara is in Ballarat.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I'd just like to say I'm a grandmother. Oh, well, first off, a mother, a grandmother and a great-grandmother. The children aren't all, I don't have any. I used to have a great-granddaughter and a couple of grandsons here, but they're all away. They're in New Queensland, in Melbourne and everything. How am I going to send $10 to my great-granddaughter in Queensland for her birthday? How's their mother going to have a tooth fairy?
Yes, the tooth fairy.
All these little things. And little stalls by the road to sell the excess mangoes. Up in Queensland, you see that a lot.
Yeah.
And the kids across the road had a lemonade stall a few years ago. You know, stuff like that. Cute things.
Thanks, Barbara. Text message as well on that theme. Give a child a $1 coin and a $10 note and they learn to appreciate its value. Give the child a plastic card, a smartwatch or phone and the available funds seem endless. Very good point there. Let's go to David in Wonthaggi. Hi, David.
Hi. What you mentioned about Warrnambool, that happened up in Moorabbin North locally with the trees all knocking out all the power lines, so there was no sort of electronic transactions up there for weeks on end.
Yeah, how did you cope?
Well, I wasn't up there. Luckily, I'm down in Wonthaggi, but going back to the main topic about cash, it's not any bank or any individual who's pushing this. It's the public's pushing for it, for the electronic transfers. And there's a bit of a tug of war with some people who are trying to fight a valiant fight to try and win and keep cash, but they're fighting against the prevailing winds, and it's mainly the older customers who love the tap and go. They don't have to get out of their car to go to another spot and line up and stand on their sore joint legs and with their walking frames, and they can just go to the business they want to go to.
And you run a business yourself?
I do, and I just with the cash used to be like 86-90% of all our sales. Now it's about 5% or less some days.
Gosh. So you're saying this is coming from the convenience factor?
The people of voting with their whatever you call that.
With
phrase,
their card, with a tap. Voting with their feet, I think, is
phone,
what it is.
Their watch, their medallion, whatever they've got, but it's just convenience factor.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for your call. This text message, leaving an iTunes card under the pillow from the Tooth Fairy just doesn't cut it. Well, how much does the Tooth Fairy leave these days? Surely not the value of an iTunes card. Sadly, cashless will see the demise of the kids' piggy bank, says Andrea. Well, Nicole Pedersen McKinnon is a financial educator and author of How to Get Mortgage Free Like Me. Welcome to the program, Nicole.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, you've come in at the right time because we've got so many people talking about what about the Tooth Fairy and how do kids learn about money if they don't have the physical cash? Can they still learn?
Look, it's such an interesting area and I think it's 100% fraught with danger. I really do. But to that iTunes under the pillow kind of Tooth Fairy thing, it's funny because I give my children, I have an 11-year-old and a 14-year-old, so I really need those salient money messages to be getting across to them now. And I give them cash, whatever purpose, you know, if they wash the car, if it's the Tooth Fairy, whatever it is, I give them cash and they give the cash straight back to me and they go, can you please put it on my debit card? Or can you please swap it for a gift card because I want to be able to use it online? So it's really quite interesting. But I think that exercise of showing them the money, the fact that they handle the money, even if they give it straight back to me, is still really important because you need to teach that even though you can't see something, it is still finite. It still runs out. And that's an absolutely key money lesson.
Is it something about having it physical and, you know, putting it in a place? You know, this is the saving money, this is the spending money. Is that so important, or can you still do that on a screen and say, oh, look, you've got $200 saved in the bank account there?
Look, to me, it's much more powerful with real money. You know, you've got this sort of cash stuffer idea where, and it really harks back to, I guess, probably the 1960s or what are we talking here, where people used to get money in an envelope for their weekly salary. And that would be almost, you know, money was kind of on the menu back then with families. So that would be doled out around the dinner table sometimes. You know, this for that, this for that, this par for this in an envelope or however it works. And then what was left over then was distributed to what the family and the parents wanted and more appropriately needed. If you don't have that visual display, it's very difficult to get that allocation of you know, where that assiduous kind of spreading of the money so that it it has maximum impact for you and your life.
This text message, it's called Progress and Change. Our tooth fairy transfers straight into their accounts. Change is inevitable. We need to embrace it.
Look, this is 100% key, and it's hard because I think the kids are embracing it very, very quickly. But there is this psychological phenomenon called coupling when it comes to money. Now, cash couples, you know, a purchase with the cost. It's right there. It's immediate. It happens in front of your eyes. What any kind of card does, you know, whether it's a gift card or an electronic transfer even, it decouples the purchase with the repayment pain. And that is an issue, particularly in these formative young minds as they're trying to wrap their head around and become good money managers.
Nicole, thank you so much for your insights.
An absolute pleasure.
Nicole Pedersen McKinnon there, financial educator and author. I'm still just picturing a tooth fairy in my head who's just sort of sitting at the desk transferring to kids. You know, she doesn't even need to visit. She can just pop it into your account. Where's the magic in that? Let's go to Ormond. Yes.
Yeah, look, I put the point. I go to markets and garage sales and particularly swap meets, if you're familiar with swap meets, like markets.
Yep.
Sell car parts and stuff, which I did last Saturday morning at Horsham. Now, it's totally unfeasible to try and be cashless at events like that because, firstly, every swap meet holder, market stall holder, is not going to have an FPOS machine on site because there's no power to start with. And you want to do a transaction as quick as possible so that you can move on to the next site because it's a rush to find the goodies you're looking for.
Good point.
So, it's a totally ridiculous situation not to have cash. I'm 70 years old, and I still live in a world where I listen to you on a 1936 radio, which is a wooden box with a blue chassis in the back with six valves and five black knobs on the front of it. I'm not up with all this modern technology that you can get scammed in. I'm using a phone that's going to be obsolete in a month's time.
We're pleased to have you as our listener. Thank you for calling in. I know there are many people who feel the same way as you. A lot of people saying, what happens to the gold coin donation? I know my kid's tuck shop still is very much via the coins. Simon is in Morwell. Hi, Simon.
Yes, good morning. I think we're sleepwalking our way, as your initial headline said, into this cashless thing. And what will end up happening is the banks will entirely control us through issuing cards. And what, for instance, will happen when they decide, oh, we don't want to hand out plastic cards anymore, put it on your phone.
Mm.
Now, I personally have drawn the line at tap and go, won't use it, I've had it disabled. I was one of the people who pushed the NAB into allowing you to disable tap and go. Because I just think it's a completely unsafe idea. But the idea of putting your money on your phone, to me, is just insane.
A lot of people do it. I was reading somewhere that 500,000 people now, it's from the ABA, that's right, the Australian Banking Association, 500,000 people now don't have any kind of physical debit or credit card. Because, you know, you can use your phone and you can transfer things digitally. And let's take another call. Chris is in Central Victoria. Thanks for waiting,
Hello.
Chris. Hi. What did you want to say?
Hi, Kirsten. It's already been mentioned quite a few times about being stranded with floods and fire and power lines down. But they found that in Maroombula, when they had the big fires there, the people could get out, but they couldn't get petrol because the petrol station didn't have any internet, so it was cash only. And people got stranded because they couldn't use their cards to get out. They couldn't get money from ATMs or anything like that. And when I'm in the CFA here, and one of the things we do coming up the fire season was to say, have a fire plan, but have like $500 cash with you because the power lines will be the first things to go down and you'll be stuck. And that's the end of the story. And this is just a little bit lacking a bit of foresight to go cashless only. My mum's always whinging to me about, I mean, I'm 65, she's 90, and she still has to go down to the bank and pay bills and things like that. And she just has to, she's in northern New South Wales. But, so it's just lacking a bit of foresight for when things go wrong. So,
thank you, Chris.
Not really a fan of cashless. I'm doing tap and go, but I'm reluctant.
Thank you for your call. I think many people in rural and regional areas, because, you know, we live with the reality of bushfires and floods and how it can really change the things in your life really quickly, or just power outages. You know, where I live, we get power outages probably about once every 2 months, and you just got to think about it. Let's go to Malcolm in Wangaratta. Hi, Malcolm.
Hi. I just wondered, it's a bit different. What happens when you go to Melbourne and you've got to be somewhere and you catch a tram, you don't have a Mikey's card, what do you do? I mean, that's what happened to me, and I caught the tram, and I don't know whether I should have paid something, but I never paid anything.
So did you put money on your Mikey through cash? Is that what you're saying?
No, I don't even have a Mikey card. I don't even know what one of them is. I mean, I'm fairly illiterate. I'm 60, you know, I'm in my late 60s, and I'm not computer illiterate. I'm a computer illiterate to a certain degree. And so what do you do? I mean, I asked some people, and they said, some people said, no, you don't have to pay. Some people said, yeah, you got to pay. Or have a Mikey's card? Right. I don't know
the answer to that one either. I have to remind myself how to catch a tram every time I come to Melbourne as well. Thank you for that, Malcolm. My name's Kirsten Diprose, filling in for Rochelle Hunt this week, and it's been wonderful spending some time with you. Angus Kidman is the editor-at-large at finder.com, who regularly writes about technology and finance. So, Angus, welcome to the program. This just must be right in your sweet spot.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a topic that, yeah, it comes up all the time, and people are passionate about it on both sides. The people who like cash don't want to see it disappear. The people who like the convenience of tap and go don't want to see that disappear. So there's really strong feelings on both sides of this debate.
But it's not a footy team, is it? Like, it's sort of integral to how we live our lives, and not just convenience and freedom, but the concept of feeling secure, you know, secure about our money.
Oh, absolutely. And so, yeah, it is intrinsic. And I think sometimes the framing gets messy because of the idea that, like, we'll literally go cashless. That looks very unlikely. I think we're always going to have contexts where cash is important. And some of those have been highlighted by the callers in terms of areas where you'd want to have them. But I think, yeah, it's already very evident. We know now that the vast majority of transactions don't involve cash. Only 13% of all transactions in Australia, according to the RBA, actually involve cash. Everything else is already cashless. So we're not in a situation where, like, there's a tipping point. The tipping point happened a while ago. Cash is now an option, but it's no longer the most common option. It's a long way from being the most common option.
So are we in a cashless society yet? So, you know, that 13% that you mentioned is where we're at now, and the ABA is projecting us to be just 4% using cash by 2030. So how close are we to being cashless?
Well, I think we'll get to the 4%, but I feel like the 4% is about where it will stop, because there are always going to be these scenarios where cash may be more appropriate. You know, maybe it's an emergency, maybe there's no power, maybe you're trying to make that gold coin payment for your tuck shop stuff. Although by 2030, you'll need a note to pay for everything at the school tuck shop, so that won't be such a thing. So, yeah, I think we are going to see that move towards it, and we're going to see individual businesses that might say, we're not taking payments in cash anymore. But I think cash disappearing entirely is not something I see happening in my lifetime. I think it will be there, but it's going to become the minority player, not the majority player that it was for many of us for most of our lives.
And I spoke at the start of the show about this concept of a functionally cashless society, of that being when about only 10% of transactions happen with cash. Is that what you define as being cashless as well?
Well, so I think I'm really resisting using this term cashless, because I think it gets people freaking about it, that the extreme. Yeah, the extreme versions of it. So I think we're no longer to be a cash dominant society. We haven't been that. We're a thing where most transactions are electronic. So it's going to be less cashless and more electronic first is where I think I'd see us going to it. And I think honestly, the data tells us that we're there now, and that we are seeing that switch where most things that happen are not using cash. Not all, but most. And we're already there. That's already happened.
I've been jotting down a couple of specific questions and waiting for you, Angus. Ben in Sale wanted to know, does a business have to charge a surcharge when a card is being used to pay?
No, they don't. So it's up to the business whether or not it chooses to charge a surcharge. If it chooses to, if it makes the choice to charge a surcharge, the surcharge can only reflect the cost of it providing that service. So if that business is being charged a 1% fee for providing the electronic thing, it can charge a 1% surcharge. It can't charge a 3% surcharge. It can't charge a flat fee. So it's not allowed to profit from, you know, passing on the surcharge, but it's entitled to do that. And individual businesses can make the decision, do we pass on the surcharge or do we, you know, hang on to it? So it is up to the business to do that. So it's not a requirement to charge a surcharge, but it's illegal to charge an excessive surcharge.
That's a good one to clear up. What about physical money? If we go towards a cashless society, will some of the value of the physical money go up? Like, will it become a collector's item?
There's a potential for some of that to happen. But I mean, this already happens when new physical money comes out. You know, those first issues are extremely valuable. The first coins have come out with King Charles on them and they were all snapped up by collectors and they were issued in that format. There was more demand for them as collector's items than as actual pieces of currency. So there is a chance that, probably notes that get issued in the next 20 years may go up in value quicker because there'll be fewer of them to start with because we are printing less money than we used to because we don't need it. So, yes, for people who are into coin collecting and note collecting, there's going to be interesting times ahead because the supply of what's available is going to be more limited than what it was in the past.
On the text line, Charlotte says, I don't know why anyone is so passionately for cashless unless they're a banker earning money with every surcharge. Why not keep the option open and only use cards if you only want to use a card? Angus, there's a lot of messages saying, look, it's really only the banks who want this and they're pushing this or they're the ones who benefit from this. Do the banks really get to benefit from this?
Having less cash around is beneficial for banks and for businesses because cash has a handling cost and we forget this. We kind of think of it as being there, but cash doesn't appear by magic in every business and in every bank. There's a distribution cost of that, which is much higher. So it is undoubtedly beneficial to banks to not have to deal with so much cash. So it's useful for them. But the fact that so many people have willingly shifted suggests it's convenient to a lot of people as well. We know from Finder research that 43% of people never carry cash anymore, not even the emergency, but they just don't find it useful. You talked about those 500,000 people who said we're happy to give up plastic cards. So there's no doubt there's something in it for the banks, but I think there is something in it for a lot of people who just see cash as an inconvenience they don't need in their lives. And there's always, there are going to be people on that side of the fence as well.
Another text is, are businesses allowed to refuse cash payments? And we did touch on this earlier, and the short answer is yes. Can you explain why, Angus?
Yes, because this is the thing. Businesses are entitled to set their terms of payment up front, and we say we are happy to be paid in this form. And as long as they're clear about it, it's then up to you whether or not you deal with them. So there is people often believe that the notion of legal tender means you must accept cash, and that's not what it means. It just means that money is the accepted medium that we are measuring how we share value between each other. But there is no requirement for a business to have to accept cash. And we have seen that pattern that some businesses have gone to not doing that. Obviously, if you want to get the widest range of customers, you want to offer the widest range of payment forms. But I think businesses sometimes face that decision of saying, well, if I need to get cash in and that means I send an employee to the bank to do that and do that stuff, that's also a cost to them. So some businesses, and again, for speed, some places say, you want to go and buy your coffee, it is quicker to tap for that than to pay for it with cash. And so that's where we really saw that happen first.
Yeah, because if you rock up with a bucket full of 5-cent pieces, a business owner can refuse that too, can't they?
Yes, this is the one law around what cash is that you basically don't have to accept more than $5 worth of any of the smaller coins. And I mean, you'd be struggling to find things where you could pay for that. But yeah, there are some rules. Businesses are not obliged to accept that. Businesses that accept cash probably will. If they're happy to have those people, they'll say, well, we'll just take that up to the bank and deal with it. But they are not. That's the one circumstance in which a business that accepts cash can refuse to accept. If you've been hanging on to your 5-cent pieces for a long time, don't take them to a business. Take them to your bank, find an ATM you can pour them into and deal with them that way.
Look, briefly, what's harder, printing money and then having to securely transfer money in armour guard vans, keeping it in bank vaults, or backing up a digital system, a fully digital cashless society system?
It's harder to distribute the money through trucks is the honest answer. No,
really?
none of these systems are perfect, but the cost and the effort and the hassle involved, and this is one of the, I would say, I think genuinely, you know, the armour guarding of cash is difficult, and I think this is the thing that's going to make it interesting that we're going to hit the point when there's 5% cash left, you know, as the transactions, you're going to go, wow, this really is the most expensive means of transaction we have. And so that's why I don't think the debate will die. Even if we accept that as a society, we think there's a role for cash, and I think we do. there's also a cost to cash, and I think maybe we need to think more about that than we have in the past.
Angus Kidman, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
Angus Kidman there, editor-at-large at finder.com. Thank you to all of our guests and to all of your calls and texts. This has really got some people riled up, and thank you, of course, for listening today. Certainly seems that there's a bit of hesitancy for Australia to become fully cashless. Remember, the Conversation Hour is also a podcast. You can listen back via the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts. My name's Kirsten Diprose, and I'll join you tomorrow.